ప్రేమ స్వరూపులైన విద్యార్థులారా, విద్యా బోధకులారా, విద్యాభిమానులారా,
I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the DSI podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form. Shaivita here. Welcome to the final section of Discourse 6 of Summer Showers in Vrindavan 1990, Hold the Reins. Last episode, we looked at a very powerful practice, a method that we can use to tap into the peace that's within us. First of all, we need to give up all individualistic, selfish thoughts, then persistently engage in the constant inquiry of what we really are. We also saw Swami's instruction that every single thought needs to go through a checkpost. As soon as a thought arises in us, we mustn't rush into action, but should instead subject that thought to the scrutiny of the intellect for a correct decision before we implement and act upon the thought. In this next section, Swami slams the brakes on the thought highway as he states,
"Haste makes waste, waste makes worry, so do not be in a hurry."
Why are we always in such a hurry? Swami points out that the moment we think of something, we think, yes, I want that. And then, I want that too. We see a poster on a bus stop and we think, I can't wait to see that at the movies with popcorn and a choc top and frozen Coke. Without subjecting any of these thoughts to the intellect, we follow them blindly and in a blind hurry, whereas Swami says that only action that is undertaken after inquiry and deliberation by the intellect can result in peace. After discussing the nature of the mind in very mindful detail, Swami proceeds to speak of what we all want to achieve out of this intangible entity that we call the mind. And that thing we want, it's peace. And Swami isn't talking about peace of mind alone. He presents a logic flow that leads us all the way to world peace.
If there is righteousness in the heart, there will be beauty in the character. If there is beauty in the character, there will be harmony in the home. If there is harmony in the home, there will be order in the nation. If there is order in the nation, there will be peace in the world.
Righteousness in the heart, to good character, to harmony in the home, to order in the nation, to peace in the world. That righteousness in the heart, that starting point to peace, is dharma, right action. But how is it possible to perform right actions without right thoughts? So basically, these right thoughts, they're where it's at. They are of primary importance. Let's not forget the vocabulary that Swami's been building up to this point. Bad thoughts are ones that create multiplicity or division. Good thoughts are those that bring our attention to the oneness that exists. So these right thoughts of oneness are what need to be firmly established in our hearts first, creating good character. And Swami says that this good character is the first link in the chain leading to peace. This peace that we all clamor for, whether we know it or not, what is it really? Is this peace obtainable merely by chanting shanti, 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 or peace, peace, peace at the end of our bhajans or our prayers? Swami breaks it down for us. There are actually three types of peace. One of these, he says, is adhibhautika, which is the peace that results from a cessation or end to disturbances caused by other beings. Then we have adhyatmika, the peace that results when disturbances caused by one's own body and mind are ceased. And finally, adhidevika, peace resulting from a cessation of disturbances caused by forces beyond human control. Let's use an example to understand this better. Say you've sat down to do some chanting and then a fly decides that that would be the best time to rest on your shoulder than your face. Relief from this fly would be adhibhautika peace, the peace that comes following relief from a disturbance caused by another being. Let's say now, the fly has now buzzed itself out the window. You start chanting, but then a severe headache comes on. Relief from this, one's own body and mind, is now adhyatmika peace. And then let's say now your head stops hurting and you try to get back to your chanting. At this point, that light drizzle outside crescendos into a thunderstorm. Then there's a power cut to your house. Relief from the restlessness and disturbance caused by this thunderstorm and other such natural calamities like cyclones, bushfires, earthquakes, even a pandemic. Relief from these would be adhidevika peace. Swami says adhidevika peace requires divine grace. It can be earned only by absolute surrender to God. So this is a state we come to when we have offered everything to God, a state where we know that we can achieve nothing by our own efforts. But before we conveniently accept this statement in a way that suits us, Swami clearly defines what this state of surrender truly is. Swami says that the concept of sharanagati, translated as surrender, is often misunderstood. Surrender doesn't mean abandoning all activities and foolishly thinking, God will do what is necessary for me because I've surrendered everything to him. Swami categorically states that this is sheer laziness. Even from a logical point of view, if we have truly surrendered, then to sit still or not act is also not our decision to make, is it? Swami presents an example that takes us all the way to the North Indian canteen in Prashanthi. If there's food on the plate, shouldn't we give work to the hands and mouth so that the food reaches our stomach? Well, Swami says, no matter how many times you chant potato chapati, potato chapati, potato chapati, can you fill your stomach? You have energy within you, so do the work. If you aren't in a position to do the work, then it's okay to leave the work to God. But regardless of whether you have the energy or not, discharge everything with the attitude, all work is for the pleasure of the Lord. Interestingly, this brings us back to the practice that we spoke about earlier, doesn't it? Removing all individualistic, selfish thoughts. This entire Summer Showers series of discourses is a beautiful melody with a single background note of oneness. Be it the misconceptions associated with the inert body, sense control, self-inquiry reigning in the mind, Swami refuses to accept that there is an other. How lovingly he keeps reminding us, God alone exists. Focus on the oneness. And this concept of surrender that we just heard about isn't any exception to this. During a Vidyadashami discourse on October 8, 1981, Swami presents a sweeping definition of what Sharanagati is. The meaning that is most current is to declare, my body, my mind, my possessions, my all, I offer to you. This is an incorrect interpretation. This interpretation is a sign of total ignorance. It concedes that you and God are distinct entities, but that isn't true. God is not separate from you, for God is in all, everywhere, at all times. How then can you be apart? How can God be a separate entity? Water, wave, and foam are only apparently distinct. All three are the same. Only their names and forms create the illusion of diversity. Further in the Vidyadashami discourse, Swami says, how can we offer something that we don't own? This body and mind aren't in our control in the first place to say, Swami, this is yours. The clincher comes later in the discourse where Swami says, to be aware of nothing other than God, this is true surrender. To see God in everything, everywhere at all times. He gives, He enjoys, He experiences. With that feeling of surrender, let's step back into Discourse 6 and make the effort of putting that potato and chapati into our stomach. Swami returns to the first link in the chain to peace, good thoughts, stating that the only way to cultivate these good thoughts is to resort to the spiritual path. And since thoughts are contagious, we should join good company and run away from bad company at any cost. If we spend time with a person who's angry, we also reply with anger. We all know the saying, tell me your company and I will tell you what you are. Bad company, bad thoughts, and a sensuous way of living will only give momentary pleasure, but it will eventually drown us in untold misery and utter ruin. Swami probes us to think deeply on this matter and reminds us that we reap what we sow. Remember what we looked at in episode 18? Reaction, reflection, resound. In fact, it's our past actions that have even brought us here. When we entered this world from our mother's womb, we didn't have a garland of pearls, diamonds, or emeralds, not even a gold chain. Swami tells us though, there was a necklace, unseen to the naked eye, bestowed on us by Lord Brahma. The results of our actions in our past births, good and bad, nothing removed, strung together as the necklace called karma. If we do good, we'll end up with a good garland. Conversely, bad thoughts, bad actions will result in a bad garland. This birth, this moment, here and now, is therefore a most sacred opportunity, a sacred time. Swami then concludes this discourse with a note on gratitude. He says, whenever we enjoy something, our heart should be filled with a feeling of gratitude. Without this feeling, man degrades himself to a level even lower than an animal. You say thanks to somebody who picks up and gives to you your own handkerchief that you happen to drop on the ground. Should you not thank God for all the precious things He has so graciously bestowed on you? He has placed you in this vast and wonderful universe, provided pure air to breathe, clean water to drink, earth to live upon. It is a great sin to forget to offer your thanks to God who has created the five elements which sustain us. Swami then presents a rather curious scenario. So, we pay tax for a house we've purchased or constructed. The tax is simply for providing electricity and water and, of course, additional fees for any other amenities. But what tax are we paying to God for providing us the sun, which illuminates the whole world? The wind, which refreshes us all on a hot summer day with a cool breeze, the torrential rain that not only cools the earth but also sustains life. Shouldn't we at least give thanks for this much? Ah, that pesky fish is back. Selfishness. As we saw last episode, eliminating selfishness involves giving up entirely our individualistic thinking and sense of separateness to the point of oneness. Why are we holding on to this non-existent, illusory sense of self? If this I is the barrier to us experiencing divine love the way the Gopikas, Nandana, Prahlada, Tukaram, and Kabir did, then let's burn it in the fire of inquiry. Letting go of all our petty desires, our likes, our dislikes, our wants, let's make the effort to bring that potato and chapati to our mouth with the knowledge that He eats, He digests, He is the energy of it all. Let's chew on the teachings, savor these teachings that Swami has so lovingly given us. Let's walk in His footsteps on this road to divinity and fall into the ocean of oneness, the ocean of divine love. With love and gratitude, we offer this episode and the entire season of the Lion's Roar at the lotus feet of our dearest, most beloved Sai, our Swami. He reads, He speaks, He listens, He flows as divine love through us all. Until next time, dearest brothers and sisters, stay awesome. Jai Sai Ram.
And sets with you. We all rise and set with you. And when I just wanna know you more, I just listen out for your the golden sun.